SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
And we're back again with a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And joining me today, all the way in California, is Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Hello, Father. And I know exactly where to begin.
Yes. Tell me. Where do we begin today?
With the fact that Peter Jackson announced last Friday, I think it was, 31, 30, 29, yes, Friday, that The Hobbit is going to premiere in New Zealand, in Wellington, of course. We all knew it would.
What an amazing surprise. What a great surprise.
Yes.
Yes, it was the big news. And of course, this news comes right after we finish uploading our previous podcast. So we never get the scoops. All the other podcasts and blogs and websites have already posted on this, except for us, The Secrets of the Hobbit. Well, here is our revenge. We're going to play a video from Australia that announces this this news. And it also shows clips of the press conference that was given with the New Zealand's Prime Minister at Hobbiton, on the brand new set, the completely rebuilt set there of the Shire, and it looks amazing, but let's listen first.
Wellington will host the world premiere of the Hobbit movie late next year. The news came as director Sir Peter Jackson showed the Prime Minister around Hobbiton.
One of the most recognisable places in Middle-earth. Hobbiton, the only seat used on Lord of the Rings, being recycled for The Hobbit. 110 days into the shoot, a break in the action as the director shows around a famous guest and gives Wellington the good news.
I think Warner Brothers in particular were blown away by the Return of the King premiere. I mean, no one, I don't think, you know, in the international industry could quite believe how the country got behind that moment. And I think everyone involved was quite honestly keen to let New Zealand have the premiere of the first Hobbit movie based on the absolute reception, the incredible reception that we had with the last Lord of the Rings film.
Sir Peter says the Prime Minister's visit shouldn't be taken as an endorsement, even though the government's revised labour laws helped bring the movie to New Zealand. And there's another bonus for the Minister of Tourism.
The set now is going to be permanently left here, so as Minister of Tourism, there's going to be people for generations that will come and enjoy this.
Sir Peter is already enjoying his return to Hobbiton, and the buzz which comes with reimagining two blockbuster movies.
We're on track. We shot for 110 days in the studio, and now we've just shot for 5 days on location, so I'm just enjoying getting some sun. It's fantastic. And we're on location for the next 7 weeks. Then next year, we have a Christmas break, go back into the studio again for another about 5 months. So it's, there's room for things to go wrong, but at the moment, fingers crossed, it's all going well, thank you.
Final second unit scenes will be shot at Hobbiton next week. Gina Gerbic, Sky News.
Fantastic news, of course, for New Zealand and for the world. And there is another bit of news in there, hidden in this report, which is quite spectacular, and that is that they will keep the Hobbit set intact after filming, instead of tearing it down like they did after filming the Lord of the Rings scenes there.
It really is turning into Middle Earth.
It is going to be Middle Earth, and probably this will be a place of pilgrimage for Hobbit fans and Lord of the Rings fans for many generations to come. I definitely want to go back there now, because I've been walking around there when the all that was left of the Hobbit holes were these white pieces of wood, kind of more or less shaped in the form of Hobbit holes. Seeing this set the way it is dressed right now, it looks absolutely fantastic. Actually, I think it looks even better than during the Lord of the Rings filming. I think that they extended it, or there are more hobbit holes, or the whole thing looks even more lush and dressed up. And it looks like a real place where you could live and where hobbits could dwell. Yeah, so I'm very, very surprised by that and impressed.
Maybe people will live there. Maybe they'll do it like... Oh crap! The name has now escaped me. Why? Why the town in Virginia in the U.S. that's basically where they recreate colonial America, and there's just like people there,
really?
You know, all hours of the day. What's that?
I didn't know that that existed. That's too funny.
Suddenly, I can't remember. Williamsburg.
Williamsburg,
Virginia.
Okay.
There, you go to Williamsburg, and you go into the center of town, and it's like walking into colonial America. There's people in colonial dress doing the kind, you know, like doing things that people would have been doing at that time, blacksmithing or, you know, the sort of the colonial medical shops, cobblers, all that kind of stuff. So maybe they'll do that here. They'll just hire a bunch of people to just live in Hobbiton and be hobbits.
I don't think they need to hire anyone. I think people would pay to live there.
If they just open it up, people would volunteer.
Absolutely. No, it's
like Father Roderick.
Yeah, I might actually consider migrating to New Zealand if I could live there. No, but I mean, every hobbit town needs a priest, right?
I think so.
A little hobbit church. I wouldn't be opposed to working in a hobbit church. No, but I think that. That would be a disappointing experience because most of the hobbit holes that you see are actually just the facade and there's nothing behind it. There were a few hobbit holes that actually you could step into, but most of them were just, it's just a front, it's just a door. And all the interior scenes, of course, are filmed on set, like Bilbo's house is not there. I mean, the door is there, but if you walk in, it's just a tiny little hole and it's you can barely stand upright. And it's, I think they actually just added that or carved out that that space so that people could take photos of the Shire, aka Matamata, from the inside of the Hobbit hole. So you see a lot of photos on Flickr and everywhere where you'll see photos taken from the inside of Bilbo's house. And so it's more a photo op than anything else. But it is, I think, going to be extremely lucrative for the town and also for the country. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are more locations that are going to be transformed into Hobbit attractions, Hobbit. I don't think that we'll ever see a Hobbit theme park. But if I owned Matamata, if I were the farmer who owns all those meadows, I would definitely strike a deal with Peter Jackson. I would say, let's not just bring the Shire here. Let's just rebuild everything. Because you can make millions, I think, if you do that. So that is, of course, great news. Very exciting. So we have a date now, right? Or do we just have a place? I think the date is here. It will open. Here it says it will open stateside in theaters on December 14th. Stateside, do they mean United States?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
So presumably the premiere will be before that. I don't know if they've said it yet.
I think it's November 2012 here on Sky News, the website that had the video. So the premiere would be. Oh, wait a minute. The doesn't really say tell us a date, but I guess it will be towards the end of November, and then the world release of the film will follow in New Zealand on December 13th. So I guess this is going to be one of these worldwide releases where everyone will get to see the movie at the same time.
Oh, cool!
So it's not going to be like Tintin, where you have to wait for months before you can get to see it in the United States, even though it's already in theaters elsewhere in the world. I guess with The Hobbit, they don't want to take any risks of people taping it or redistributing it via the torrent sites. They want everyone in the theaters multiple times, probably.
That's right. I think they can trust that it will be a success everywhere that it plays.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you get two generations. This is very much like when they released the prequels of Star Wars. You get the generation of the parents that have seen the Star Wars movies when they were kids, and they now take their kids to see the prequels. And I guess that when George Lucas re-releases, what is it, Phantom Menace in 3D in January or February next year, they're probably going to get three generations, because you now have the Clone Wars generation that has seen all the stuff on TV and now want to see the movies for real. And I guess with The Hobbit, you know, since the Lord of the Rings was 10 years ago, there's definitely a new market here. I'm going to love it. I'm excited. So that was the biggie for today, but there is much more news here in our show notes. Peter Jackson had a party, or is about to have a party. What is it?
He had a very expected party. His birthday was this past Sunday, October 31st.
Really?
It was his 50th.
50 years old. Yeah. And I noticed in the video that we just played that he is turning back into a hobbit again.
Yep.
So he could just put up, you know, dress in some hobbit clothes and put on a wig, and they could refilm Bilbo's birthday. And it wouldn't be much of a change, I guess. He definitely has the hobbit profile right now. I wonder if they eat hobbit food on the set. If they prepare like rabbit stew or something like that, I don't know.
I'm sure they must.
What else happened this past week?
Well, I think before we go on, we should both take an opportunity to say happy birthday, Peter.
Oh, of course. Yes, I forgot that Peter Jackson is listening religiously to this podcast because he has nothing else to do right now.
That's right.
Yes, so yes, absolutely. Have a great one, and thanks for all you do.
That's right. Okay, so next up, I think the other sort of equally big news compared to the announcement about the premiere is that a reporter by the name of Quint from Ain't It Cool News at ainitcool.com was invited by the producers of The Hobbit to become an embedded reporter with the production.
Wow.
Yeah, he apparently got an email about a month ago inviting him over to come over, stay on location for 2 months during the shoot, and be in there with the crew and the cast and just write about their adventures and take films on the set and everything.
That is amazing. I'm looking at his first report here, full of photos, and this is in Matamata. And he apparently is allowed to walk around and take photos. And on this photo, I think this is Frodo that I'm looking at.
It is.
It's Frodo, and I guess the other guy must be Gandalf? I don't know. But it's definitely him, isn't it? And Peter Jackson is taking
it's
a
Elijah
picture.
Wood.
Taking a picture with a red photo camera. Holy cow. So, that is important because now we know that that Frodo, at least the scenes with Frodo, will be in the Shire. I don't think we speculated about this, but we didn't have a confirmation. I just want to go through the tidbits in this article here because this is definitely talking. Speaking of the secrets of The Hobbit, wow.
Yep, we're really getting the secrets here.
Unbelievable. So here he is in Matamata, Waikato in New Zealand on a northern island, also known as Hobbiton. The first photo he shows is a photo of one of the trees. I don't think this is the party tree, but there's another big tree on the left of the party tree, and it's surrounded by trucks. And as far as I can tell, this is probably catering. I can see all sorts of, you know, small tables, and I don't know. And there are some green tents there, so they might actually just set up the whole catering for in preparation for the shooting that takes place that day. The second photo shows part of the hill. There's this one big hill that has several levels, and the hill looked exactly like this even before they filmed The Lord of the Rings. That is why. While they were scouting, there was like, this is the perfect place for us to shoot Hobbiton because it already has this configuration. But it was just used by the sheep, you know. There's a farmer there that, and so I don't know how much they refurbished it now. I do think that a lot of the grass that we've seen, a lot of the plants were added because when I was there, it was kind of a very simple setup and not very pretty. What I'm looking at right now is much more, it looks more inhabited and, definitely lots more diversity in plants and flowers. And there is just this amazing amount of people standing there in front of one of these hobbit holes, with a rig. This is actually a small arm that they use, and they put a camera on the end of it, and so they can make these nice sweeping movements with the camera. So I think it's a mini crane. That's how they call it. Let's see what he writes about it. As amazing as it looks in those pictures or in the movies, there's something incredibly surreal and humbling to stand on top of Bag End and overlook the Shire. I love good CGI. I have a lot of respect for the digital artists that toil away for hours and days and weeks and months in a dark room so we can go to ancient Greece or Pandora or spend some time with Jurassic Park dinosaurs or Gollum or Caesar. But if there was ever a shred of doubt that real wins it, was obliterated as the sheep bayed, horse neighed, wind blew, and smoke started pouring out of hobbit hole chimneys, dotting the lush green landscape in the valley below me. Wow, that's one phrase. No commas. And when I say green, I mean green. The grass in this North Island, New Zealand farmland is like Wizard of Oz Technicolor. It's so bright it almost hurts the eyes. And that is true. It's not just on the set, the entire area, the entire region. You know, you have to travel. If you leave Auckland, you go north, and it takes several hours before you get there. But the entire landscape for hours looks like it's part of Hobbiton. It's part of the Shire. And it's grassland, basically. Hills and trees, a few trees, but mostly grassland. Let's see what else he says. Oh, here's another photo taken from, I guess, one of the other hobbit holes on there's a little pond here. I'm trying to figure out where this is. I guess this is, oh, this must be right of the party tree. Huh. I don't know. They added lots of hobbit holes that weren't there. Or are we looking at the bigger hill and this is just the right side? Oh, that could be it.
I think that's it.
That's probably it. Yeah, I think the hill is further up. We don't see that. And there's actually indeed a smaller kind of circle with hobbit holes a little bit on the right side. And yeah, I think that must be it. And there's a little garden that is there with, I think, some fruit trees and some vegetables. And I think that was actually being planted when I walked around there. Interesting. There's someone sitting at the side of the pond. It's a very peaceful place to be. I mean, this mustn't be hard. Yeah, well, it's probably hard work for the crew, but at the same time, it beats being in you know, on the sound stages all the time and being inside. Let's see what else he says. Once past security, I found myself driving along a small dirt and gravel road following signs to crew parking. The countryside was beautiful and Tolkien-esque, but it wasn't until I made a turn and saw the incredibly iconic stone bridge leading through the Green Dragon that it really struck me where I was. Yeah, the bridge is back. And it's not made of stone, by the way. it's all wood. That feeling intensified standing at base camp, perched on top of Bag End, looking over Hobbiton with dozens of hobbit holes laid out over acres of green hills and a massive party tree anchored in the middle of everything. The crew was setting up a crane out on the narrow walkway in front of Bag End for the first shot actually in Hobbiton in over 10 years. Because of the narrow and steep path down, the crew had to bring crane parts down and assemble much of it there. It took a little while, but before too long, the familiar circular green front door of Bag End cracked open, and out stepped an even more familiar face. Here it comes. Munching on jelly toast, Frodo Baggins sauntered out and hopped down the steps leading to the mailbox, grabbed some mail, and headed back inside. Oh, that is so cool. What's Frodo doing in The Hobbit? I don't want to spoil too much, but I can say that Frodo is part of the connecting tissue between The Hobbit and Fellowship of the Ring. In fact, the next shot was an over-the-shoulder on Elijah Wood hammering a sign up on Bag End's front gate, "No admittance except on party business." You guys should have an idea where that puts this moment in timeline. Dave, tell me, where is this in the timeline?
Well, it sounds like what they're doing is that this The Hobbit is going to be sort of a reminiscence of Bilbo right around the time of the unexpected party. So it looks like what they're doing is they're juxtaposing, or the long expected party. They're juxtaposing the unexpected party that happens at the beginning of The Hobbit, when Gandalf just shows up and all these dwarves start showing up, with the massive birthday party that Bilbo plans for himself and Frodo. That's why there's you have Frodo hammering the sign in that says no admittance except on party business. That happens right at the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring.
How cool is that? So that is a huge spoiler, I guess, but it fills in the blanks.
So they're going to do... Spoiler warning, listeners. Well, oops. Sorry. Too late.
Too late. People shouldn't be listening to this podcast if they don't want to get spoiled.
That's right. It says it in the name, Secrets of the Hobbit.
Exactly.
We're going to give it all away.
Exactly.
So
might as well
re-baptize it. Sounds like what they're going to do, I mean, just reading on, we won't read the whole article, but if you read on, what you see is that they set it up with a conversation between Frodo and Bilbo about whether Gandalf's going to show up. And Bilbo says that he wouldn't miss it, of course. And Frodo says he's going to run off and surprise him, which is exactly what we see at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring. Gandalf, you know, trundling along the road on his little cart, and then Bilbo is in the woods, you know, reading and smoking a pipe or something, and then he runs out to the road and says, you know, "Hey, Gandalf, you're late." And you have that fun little quote about wizards never being late.
Right.
So looks like that's where this is going to come in, and they're going to, as soon as Frodo runs off, we're going to do sort of a, you know, shot of Bilbo sitting and thinking back, and then that's when we transition from Ian Holm, who's going to be playing the elderly Bilbo, to Martin Freeman playing the young Bilbo 60 years earlier.
Amazing. So it's going to bring us back to the beginning of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. We will see a scene that we already know, but it's going to be kind of this transition to this other party at the beginning of The Hobbit. So that's a very smart way to do that, and to reintroduce us to the actors that we know, and then helping us to connect with their counterparts, basically, in The Hobbit story. The only thing that I'm wondering is, if they film it this way, if they tell it this way, what will happen to people that watch everything in sequence and watch The Hobbit first and then The Lord of the Rings? And the party at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings might be a little bit redundant because you've already seen it.
That is an interesting point. I have sort of two questions about that too. I'm wondering if this is going to be the only time we see Frodo, or if we're going to keep going back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, like, is it going to be sort of the movie? Are they just going to introduce the movie with this shot, and then the rest of the movie will be set in the time of The Hobbit? Or are we going to keep going back to the sort of, for lack of a better term, present day? We're going to keep going back to the time of the long expected party, keep seeing interactions between Frodo, Bilbo, and Gandalf, and, you know, keep having these moments where it's like, you know, Frodo says something or Gandalf says something, and then Bilbo says, "Yes, that reminds me of the adventure with the troll." And then we go back and we jump back into the Hobbit timeline. So I wonder is it going to be just this one-time thing, or is it going to be back and forth? And if it is, especially like you're saying, if it is back and forth, that'll make it darn near impossible to watch this as an actual prequel. Or maybe not. You're right, because literally this movie starts off right at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring. So if they show us any more scenes of Frodo and Bilbo at the time of the long expected party in this movie, it's going to end up getting into the time frame of the movie. So,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We won't be able to watch them in sequence.
I don't know. I doubt that they would go that route, though. I think that they will probably just show us everything leading up to what we see in The Lord of the Rings, but it doesn't make sense to do things twice. But it will be enough. It will be similar enough to kind of awaken our memory and remind us of what we saw in The Lord of the Rings, and then quickly bring us back to the timeline of The Hobbit. I was also wondering something more practical, and that is, if they show the Shire at the time of The Lord of the Rings, and we'll see Bilbo, the old Bilbo, at Bag End, then they will have to do some major set redressing while there, because of course the Shire looks very different in The Hobbit. Well, not really very different, but I mean, I don't know how much time there is between the timeline of The Hobbit and that of The Lord of the Rings, but I'm pretty sure that the trees have grown and the plants are different and the flowers are different. So I don't know if they will do that or whether they will just use different perspectives or different camera angles just to suggest that we're looking at the Shire in a different time of part of history.
Yep, that's an interesting point. You know what they could do. Have you ever watched the Godfather films?
Yes.
So maybe what they could do, if they do have a whole bunch of extra shots from the timeline of The Lord of the Rings in this film, maybe what they'll do is they'll release this, and then eventually they'll go back and they'll make an edited version of the entire Hobbit and Lord of the Rings series,
where
they
give you
they cut it up and they put all the Hobbit scenes first, and then they add all of the Lord of the Rings footage from the Hobbit into the Lord of the Rings films. You know how in The Godfather 2 they have the interspersing scenes of Vito Corleone played by Robert De Niro, and then the modern day stuff with Al Pacino, and then they created the made for TV version where they cut those up and put them in chronological order.
Oh my goodness. I hope they're not going to do that.
Maybe they'll do that.
It'll make them a lot of money, but I'm not sure the fans are going to like that, because that sounds, again, like George Lucas to me.
Yes.
Holy cow. Let's see. Another interesting tidbit here in this report is that apparently the scenes with Ian Holm, standing in for the old Bilbo, were not filmed on location in Matamata, but they were all done in London. And while filming Elijah Wood's scenes, they just played back some of the footage already shot in London. And I guess that is going to be on a soundstage so that they could match it with what they were filming in New Zealand. So I don't know if that's because Ian Holm's age or whether it just didn't match his calendar. I don't know. But that's going to be quite a challenge as well to make that match, even though they have quite a bit of experience with this. As we all know, in The Lord of the Rings, there are many scenes where you see dialogue between Frodo and Sam, for instance, where the shots of Frodo were filmed 2 or 3 years before the reaction shots of Sam. So if they can make it work with a time span of 3 years, then they can certainly do that with this footage that is shot with it, well, just a few months or weeks between them.
Pretty cool that they're using Martin Freeman to stand as the stand-in for those Frodo reaction shots.
Yes, indeed.
So Elijah Wood actually gets to act with Bilbo. Just
right. You're right. Yes, with the younger Bilbo. Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that. But that's amazing.
He's traveling through time.
Wow, amazing, amazing. Let's see, and then of course Gandalf is going to be there as well, right? Gandalf will show up. He wouldn't miss a chance to let off his whiz poppers. He'll put on quite a show, you'll see, and Frodo grins, saying he's going to go surprise him, and bounds off down the path like a kid at Christmas. Amazing. So it's a glimpse of the pre-ring Frodo that we meet in the Fellowship. So we're going to see Frodo, yes, before he got anywhere near the ring. And then let's see, there's some more. Oh, there's a beautiful photo here of the bridge and the green dragon, which actually wasn't part of Hobbiton in the description. It was, and I learned this from listening to that other podcast, the what is it, Beneath Your Feet podcast. I listened to it at the gym the other day, and I think the first or the second episode is about the Shire, and so according to the description in Tolkien, the Green Dragon was actually quite far away. It was more like on the road towards Hobbiton, but it wasn't part of Hobbiton. And here it's on the other side of the pond. And according to this report, there is a shot that's going to be the transition to 60 years earlier, with young Bilbo sitting in front of Bag End, contently smoking a pipe and casually blowing smoke rings as Gandalf comes along and presents him with his adventure. Wow. And Elijah Wood is super excited to be there. And yeah, it must be amazing for him to just relive that, because it's been so influential on his whole career. And it's still, I think, the role of his lifetime. Everyone will still, whatever he does after this, people will still think of him as, oh, he's the guy who played Frodo.
That's right. That'll always be the, whenever they introduce him at parties, that'll be the first thing they say.
Of course. Of course. Very, very cool. Well, I invite our listeners to go over to ainticool.com and check out this report, and especially the photos for yourself, because it's amazing. And I'm looking forward to seeing much more, because I think that he's going to stay there for a while, and they're not done filming there. So very, very cool. And how cool of the production to do this and invite a fan site, although Ain't It Cool is probably commercial now, but still, it's not done on the official Hobbit website, but to involve us and to give us a glimpse behind the scenes, I'm very excited. It's what I've begged for all along, our, you know, the months behind us. I was like, provided we get to see some glimpses of what they're filming there at Matamata.
Yeah, and our listeners should definitely keep an eye on Quint's column over at ainticcool.com, because he's going to be posting pretty regularly. Yeah. I think maybe once a week, it sounds like.
Fantastic. Can't wait to see it. Let's take a short break.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
I want to take a minute and talk about the sponsors for this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And one of those sponsors is Bluehost, which is a hosting company for a website or a blog. Really simple, one-click, made-for-dummies type of setup of your website. But the best thing is the price and what you get for it. It's just $6.95 per month. So that's, what, a big cup of coffee? One of those fall specials at what's that coffee store? The big one over there in the U.S. I'm blanking out here. Lack of
Starbucks.
Coffee. Starbucks. There you go. Why can't I? My mind is still in Hobbiton.
They don't have Starbucks in Hobbiton.
Nor do they have Bluehost. They should, though, because it's a great deal. And it's for $6.95, you get unlimited storage space and unlimited transmission of data. So even if your blog suddenly gets discovered by Peter Jackson and he tweets something about it and you get like 10 million visitors, that's going to be Bluehost's concern, not yours. You will still pay $6.95 per month. And you get your own .com domain name included in the price for a whole year. So it's an amazing deal. Just go to our website, sqpn.com, or our subsite for this podcast, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com. And if you click on the Bluehost banner, you'll find more information. And then we are also sponsored by Amazon. We are an affiliate of Amazon. And so if you are preparing to do your shopping, you know, Black Friday is not far away, with Thanksgiving, etc., coming up. And then, of course, Christmas. If you go and do some shopping at Amazon, we invite you to go to SQPN first and click on the Amazon banner. It's just like a 30-second detour, but it helps us tremendously, because Amazon gives us something back for that click, and that helps us pay for the bandwidth. So hopefully you can help us out. Back to the show, and back to some feedback. I want to take a short break here and want to thank everyone who is following us currently on our refurbished Hobbit Podcast Twitter account. We've been reworking most of our Twitter accounts for the shows that we do over at sqpn.com. And ever since we started this new approach to Twittering, we've gotten a lot of new followers, and I'm very excited about it, and also a lot of feedback via Twitter. It's amazing how much that has changed. In the past, people would go to a website and just leave a comment there, or they would write an email. Now people just, you know, they just send you a tweet. It's fast, it's easy, and, you know, in 3 or 4 seconds you can give some feedback. So I would encourage you, if you are not doing that already, to follow us. Again, our Twitter account is at Hobbit Podcast. We currently have 361 followers, which is like, I don't know, like 20 times more than we had a couple of weeks ago. And we had some people sending us tweets. Let me give a shout out to Daryl Mike BFS, who is writing, excited to watch your show. When is The Hobbit going to be here in the Philippines? Well, I guess we have the answer for you. It's going to be December 14th because it's going to be a worldwide release, give or take, you know, a couple of days or perhaps a week. But it's going to be released everywhere in the world at the same time. The Winter Twins are also sending us a message on Twitter. The Hobbit is their favorite book, and they started to listen to the podcast, and they love it.
I saw them at the Anaheim Comic Con earlier this summer.
Really? Oh my gosh, that is so cool!
They're pretty fun. They're sort of young. I think they're teenagers. Just two young ladies who are twins who co-author books together.
How fun. And so they also co-author one Twitter account, Twitter Twins.
Yes, apparently.
Mike Evers writes, I like your discussion last week about lunch. Very Hobbit-like in that food is never far away from our thoughts. And that is certainly true. I guess it's also because you are recording this, Dave, you know, right around breakfast time in California.
That's right.
I'm recording this right around dinner time. So yes, food is on our mind when we're recording this. And I also tweeted about some Hobbit recipes. I think Bilbo's Breakfast was posted on some site, and I linked to it. And that's kind of the fun thing of having a Twitter account. Instead of writing a whole blog post, which I'm really too lazy for and too busy for, I just, you know, whenever I find something cool, I just send out a tweet. And that does the job pretty well. There was also some talk about people watching the extended version of The Two Towers that is now out on Blu-ray, and there's this whole start with Gandalf fighting the Balrog, and I totally forgot about it. I've been watching a bit of the Blu-rays, but I haven't gotten to this part yet. But that was an amazing fight. Mm-hmm. They go all the way down, and actually, that's exactly where we are currently with our Middle Earth podcast. We entered the Mines of Moria, and in our next show, we're gonna try to find the stairs, you know, where and the bridge where Gandalf falls down with the Balrog, and then goes up the stairs to that tower, and oh my gosh, it's amazing. And let's see what else. Oh, and then there was a suggestion by Twitter follower Patty Fimbrethil. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Or was it actually someone else? It was Nathaniel Thinks.
The Silmarillion proposal?
Yes. Nathaniel Thinks writes, with the success of HBO's Game of Thrones, couldn't we see a similar TV series based on the Silmarillion? I thought it was a great idea. I thought, yeah, there's definitely... you'd have to rewrite. You can't just take the Silmarillion and turn that into a Game of Thrones TV series. But to take the background, I can totally see that happening.
I certainly think that... I'm of the opinion that... that if you're going to do anything with the Silmarillion, that the HBO sort of miniseries television approach is the best way to do it, since you can really take your time.
Yes, yeah, and it can you can do something that is very film-like, and especially if it's a miniseries, you don't have to, you know, hit the ratings and everything. That's a big drama right now in TV. There, TV has been better than ever. All the good writers are now working for these amazing TV shows, but there are too many of them. And so they get canceled because they all try to get a piece of the pie, and we're still looking for that next Lost that everyone is watching. But since we don't have that, everybody is watching a little bit of everything, and so a lot of these shows get canceled. If you do a miniseries, if HBO would pick this up, you wouldn't have that constraint. You wouldn't have that fear that, oh, they might start with the Silmarillion and it gets canceled after three episodes. But there are also some people that don't want to see this. Michael Patton tweeted that, I don't think this is going to work at all. So I don't. We'll have to wait and see what the Hobbit movies are doing. I think if they're doing extremely well, there might be more of Middle Earth in the future.
Well, I do know. I mean, I think that there's a ton of interest in the Silmarillion license. I can say for sure that nothing will happen with it until after Christopher Tolkien has died. Probably he seems pretty set on not letting anyone get the license for Silmarillion to produce anything. So the licensing situation currently stands that the Saul Zentz Corporation and then their subsidiary Middle Earth Enterprises owns the licenses for doing film and other kinds of adaptations of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And so that's what they've licensed out to Warner and for, you know, video games and films and stuff. I believe that the Tolkien estate actually still owns the license for books and whatnot. So if you want to do a book about it, you have to go through them. However, the Tolkien estate also holds on to all of the licenses for the Silmarillion and anything not Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. They still have the license for that. And they seem pretty, at least Christopher Tolkien seems pretty dead set on not letting anyone have it. But I don't think we'll see anything happen with it anytime soon. And certainly people who are thinking like, oh, maybe Peter Jackson will do it. Probably not.
Or it's going to be a very old Peter Jackson.
Very old Peter Jackson. I don't know. I think Peter Jackson probably will want to move on to something else after this anyway. Silmarillion is fraught with risk, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be much more difficult because people don't know the story that well, whereas mm-hmm. both The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings were just, you know, they've been favorites of, worldwide hits for almost a century now. So, yes, you can definitely tap into that. Then again, it's the world of Tolkien just merits, I think, further storytelling because it's so rich. But perhaps it just should just take place in a different medium. Perhaps the games are part of a whole new outlet for, you know, Middle Earth related stuff, and perhaps less menacing to the Tolkien estate because it's. You know, it's just a game.
Yes.
So you get more creative license with the games.
Hey,
apparently.
So I Twitter responded to Nathaniel with my thoughts on it, and I included the Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, on it, and he responded back. He says, "I think it is the only way it could be done, but I think it would probably be a bad idea."
Right. Well, we'll just
I think video games is much more promising route.
Yeah. Who knows. Speaking of which, I gather you might have something to say about this video game that's coming out anytime now, The War in the North.
Yeah.
Didn't you have a little adventure related to that this past weekend?
Last Friday, I was over at Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, their offices in Burbank. Got to go over there, met a colleague from the Middle Earth Network named Tyler Michael Johnson. Tyler is an actor in the LA area, and he does the Ask Gollum podcast, which has been on hiatus for a while but is going to come back soon. His Gollum voice is quite impressive. We went over to Warner Brothers last Friday for an hour in the afternoon. We got to wander around the offices, which was a sort of a very it was like a geek's dream. When we first walked in, they had life-size statues of Batman from the Batman Arkham City game and the dwarf Farron from the new Lord of the Rings War in the North game, right next to the receptionist desk.
Wow.
These giant statues, yeah. And it was great. Everybody was really nice. We got to go down to a private 1 hour demo of the game. They set up three Xboxes networked together, and each of us had our own screen, and we did a little co-op mode. There's three characters in this game. So Lord of the Rings War in the North takes place concurrent with the storyline of the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, it's pretty clear when you look at the artwork and stuff in the game that this game is meant to sort of take place in the continuity of the films, I believe. And indeed, I actually got to do an interview with the guy who composed the music for it, Enon Zur, yesterday. And Enon was telling me that he was originally brought on to help to consult to help the developers at Snowblind adapt Howard Shore's music to the game so that, you know, because they wanted it to feel like the film. And he ended up, what he ended up doing is just writing an entirely original soundtrack, but that was sort of in the mode of Howard Shore's music. So clearly they're trying to make this game feel like the films, but it's an entirely original story, brand new characters. There's a ranger, an elf, and a dwarf, who form a little party, and they are basically commissioned by Aragorn to go sort of open up a second front in the war on the War of the Ring in the north. So it's actually really similar, Father, in setup to Lord of the Rings Online, to sort of the initial storyline of Lord of the Rings Online.
Nice.
There's things going on in the north. Sauron's minions are plotting. And that what they're doing could endanger the ring bearer and other kinds of things in the north. And so these heroes gather and go and fight while the fellowship is on its way. So you actually start out in Fornost. You visit a dwarf city. You travel all over the north. You fight snow trolls and other characters, and then I believe you end up even visiting the Gundabad, which is sort of the capital of the goblins in the north and stuff. So, yeah, we had to play it for an hour. It's an amazing game. It's really, really fun. The graphics and artwork are beautiful. The controls are pretty good. The game mechanics are quite enjoyable. It's a hack and slash sort of action RPG. It's all about the action, and it's rated M. It is violent. It's yes. Really violent. It's far more violent than any Tolkien-themed game ever.
Oh, really?
More violent than the films. Uh-huh. Certainly much more violent than the books. It's a very sort of, in some ways, it's very un-Tolkien-esque that way, since he wasn't really a violence guy. But it makes for interesting combat.
Huh, interesting. It's the other game that came out on the Xbox, the previous one, was Lord of the Rings Conquest? Was that the one?
I think, yeah, that was the most recent one.
That was pretty violent as well. I've been playing it a little bit. It was a hard game to play. But my gosh, it was all about just, you know, killing orcs and everything. So this one is probably a little bit more grim. The Enon Zur, by the way, is the same composer who did the music for Dragon Age and Dragon Age 2. Also pretty violent games. I mean, that's more of a role-playing game, but the battles themselves, I had to turn off the blood. There is a setting, and you can just get rid of the blood, because I was just getting nauseous while just watching, like, everyone you kill. Like,
you may have to turn down the settings on War in the North then, too, because that's how it is, too.
Oh, I don't like all that.
Showering you with blood.
It's like watching Dexter in Middle Earth, you know?
Yes, that is exactly how it was. I'll tell you what, too. If you have even a touch of arachnophobia, then you should just skip over the stage in Mirkwood.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Running around fighting all these giant spiders. It's
Ew.
Terrifying.
Hey, the soundtrack, by the way, the video game score is already out on iTunes. It came out actually on November the 1st. And as usual in iTunes, you can listen to, you know, these little mini bits of the music before you buy it. So I'm just going to press the button here. Take a listen. Very nice. Echoes of Angmar. This is the first track here on the CD. Or it's not really a CD now. It's digital download, so I'm old-fashioned. But there are 19 tracks here. And of course, if you buy them individually, it's going to be very expensive. But the album itself is around $10. So check that out. We'll include a link in the show notes.
If you tune into Middle Earth Network Radio, you can actually hear it on air occasionally. It's in a rotation now because I got a copy of it last Friday. So.
Sweet. Excellent. Uh-huh. It sounds very much like Howard Shore's stuff.
Yeah, Enon Zur is incredible. It was a blast talking to him. He thinks that video games are creating a renaissance in original music composition. He says it's much more liberating to work in video games as a composer than on television or films.
Fantastic. I'm excited about that because I love this kind of music. I always love the whole revival of orchestral music in the movies after, you know, we got rid of the horrid synthesizer music from the 80s. And, you know, it's guys like John Williams that set the tone, and Zimmerman and it's just because it turns your movie, or in this case, the game, kind of timeless. This music will still be great music 50 years from now or 100 years from now. The music will still stand. The game itself will be considered like, I don't know, like ancient history. But music just puts it on a whole different level. So very cool. There's also a website of Enon Zur, by the way. I'll include links to this in the show notes if you want to check out his photos. There's a whole photo gallery of him recording the War in the North soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool to see. Actually, it looks a little bit like the dude from The Shield.
A little bit.
Just a tiny. Actually, no, not at all. And one photo, he looks like that, but the others, no, not really. Okay, let's get back to, in case he's listening to this, let's go quickly back to the news and see if we've got some smaller stories today.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
So we have our dwarf introducing us to the smaller stories of this past week. There have been some more spoiler pictures taken on the Southern Island, and there is speculation that this might be Bjorn's house or Radagast.
I think Bjorn's Hall is a really good bet.
It's the photos are on theonering.net, and there are quite a few of them. And I'm not sure where this is taken, but it shows you a road and some hills with trees, some magnificent mountains in the background with even some snow on the slopes. After all, this is still springtime over there in New Zealand, or the beginning of springtime. We see in the middle of this forest, near, I think, the slope of a mountain, there's this house being built, and I don't know exactly what to make of it. What makes you think that this is from, what was it, Radagast or Bjorn?
Bjorn's Hall? It just, it strikes me as, I mean, I guess we don't, it's hard to speculate whether it might be Radagast, because we're not told much about Radagast, except that he made his home in Mirkwood.
Yes.
So it's really, you know, like, it's not what we can really say. I have no information. But Bjorn, the description of Bjorn's home is that it really does look like a home, you know, sort of a house. It's made out of wood. It's quite large. There's a large gathering room in the center of it. And it just kind of looking at it, I'm just and we know for a fact that this is a location that we're going to see in the film, whereas people have said like, oh, well, we might get to see Radagast and his home and all that. But, you know, we don't actually know what we will be seeing, whereas we know for a fact from the book that Bilbo and the dwarves visit Bjorn's Hall and we get a description of it. And this seems to match it pretty well. You know, I don't think, at least as I recall, there's nothing in The Lord of the Rings, and that's where we hear about Radagast, not in The Hobbit, in The Lord of the Rings. There's nothing saying anything about what his dwelling is like, other than that he lived in this particular location in Mirkwood. They don't say he had a house or a cottage or anything. Mm-hmm. And given that he's sort of the guy who's at one with nature, almost kind of like a Saint Francis of Assisi character, you know, I'd be tempted to believe that he doesn't actually live in a structure.
I don't know. What makes me think that this is Radagast's home is that the facade of the house has these small openings above the door of the main entrance. And to me, they look like basically entrances for pigeons. It's where the birds can fly in. And actually, the decoration on at least beneath some of them shows some birds. And if I recall well, actually, I'm reading this from a site. Somewhere in this article, they said that his name, Radagast, is also known as Eowendil, a name that translates as bird lover or bird tamer. So I'm thinking pigeons, bird tamer, Radagast. That's just my two cents. Not sure.
That could be.
Anything.
I mean, that's an excellent. That's an excellent notion, especially the idea that those could be openings for birds, and that those were birds in particular Radagast had an affinity for. I will say, bird tamer was a name that Saruman used, a term Saruman used in contempt to describe him.
Okay.
The one thing about Bjorn, though, is that there's nothing saying that Bjorn couldn't also commune with birds,
yes,
because he also
yes.
kept around a lot of animals. So
that's true. Oh well.
I wonder how we may not know until we actually see the movie. So we may have to lay down a bet.
Oh, hope we'll see it earlier. We should make a list of predictions actually, and see what we got right or wrong. I might actually put that up on the website as well. Speaking of which, we're at the end of our show. We've got some more news left, but we'll talk about that next week on our show. And in the meantime, if you follow us on Hobbit Podcast on Twitter, that's also the place where we will send you the latest news. I was about to say something and now I forgot what it was. Oh yeah, speaking of the website, you can find us on thehobbit.sqpn.com, but of course most people will find us in iTunes. And I want to ask again, if you have a little bit of time, could you go over to the iTunes store and write a short review of this podcast? I think that the army of fans of The Hobbit is growing exponentially, and we'd like to actually see that back in our statistics. And so, but we need you to help us get the word out, because we are very busy during the week, and so we don't have time to go and promote this all day long. But if we do a little bit of that altogether, I'm pretty sure that we can bring in a lot of people to this podcast, and the more the merrier. So if you want to do that, please do so. And, if you want to retweet anything from our Twitter feed, that you're very welcome to do that as well. Anything you want to plug at the end of the show, Dave?
Yeah, just briefly, go over to Middle Earth Network's news, which is news.mymiddle-earth.net, and you can see the results of the Halloween costume contest that we had. There are some fantastic entries, and we posted photos for those. And if you have a costume, the Mythgard Institute's costume contest is ongoing through Saturday. So take a picture of yourself, or if you have one, go post it on the Mythgard's Facebook page to enter their contest. And what you win is free, you get to audit one class for free.
Fantastic. And that's a great prize. Well, thank you very much for this new episode. And thank you for listening. And we hope to see you back soon next week, certainly with more news from New Zealand, a.k.a. Middle Earth. See you on Twitter. And may the hair on your feet grow ever longer.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.